This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome into B-Town's continuing coverage of the impact of COVID-19 here in Rhode Island. I'm Bill Bartholomew. On this episode, a conversation with the president of the NAACP's Providence chapter, Jim Vinson.
Well, good morning, Bill.
How's it going?
Fantastic. How about you?
Excellent. Thanks. That is quite a scholarly location you've got yourself in there. I mean, come on now.
Well, you know, I looks count.
All right. Well, Jim Vinson heads up the NAACP here in Providence. And I mean, let's get right into this right now. We've seen the health equity question playing itself out. There's been a lot of attention here in Rhode Island on the Latinx community. 44% of the cases that have been confirmed are coming from that community. But nationally, we're seeing a lot of questions around, broadly speaking, minority communities. Can you sort of touch on that and how, you know, just where this may be coming from a societal standpoint at minimum?
Well, you know, it really exposes the conditions of people of color. We know that people of color are disproportionately essential workers. They're on the front lines. They continue to be on the front lines. They continue to be underpaid. We also know that communities of color have a disproportionate amount of underlying condition like diabetes, hypertension. We also know that they're less able to work at home, let's say, than their white counterparts, and that we also know that they have experienced a disproportionate amount of the layoffs. So we're in a pandemic calamity here. I know in Rhode Island, you know, the Latinx community, as you said, is suffering at 3 times their population. But what I think people sometimes overlook is that the Black community is suffering at 2 times our population. And when I say Black community, we have one of the most diverse Black communities in the country. I'd say, you know, maybe 50% of the Black community is actually African-American. The other 50% are African and Caribbean. So we have a diverse community that speaks languages other than English. So I've been asking or urging the governor's staff to be mindful of that. Be mindful that you have a community of color, Black folks, and I also mentioned Native Americans and Southeast Asians as well. But I said, in terms of looking at Black folks, that we not only have a community that's suffering, but they have different languages and we need to be able to communicate to them as well.
No question. That's one of the key issues that, you know, I've been hearing from the community here in Providence, and also trying to push to the governor is, look, Spanish, Portuguese, English, American Sign Language, that doesn't cover all of our bases here in the state, even close to it. So it'll be interesting to see if they're actually rolling out an expanded translation and interpretation messaging operation here in the coming days.
Yeah, I've been on the phone with Courtney Hawkins of DHS and Kasim Yarn, as well as Joe Sachs of the governor's staff, and I've told all of them that this is very important. You know, we do have a community of Cape Verdeans, for example, that is not just Portuguese, but it's Portuguese Creole. Right. There's a lot of Haitians here, and it's not necessarily just French; it's French Creole. You know, we have also Africans from West Africa that speak French, as well as in terms of the Southeast Asian community. I don't want to forget that. You know, I saw something where Chinese or Mandarin was being offered. Well, there are very few Chinese Americans in Rhode Island, relatively speaking. Southeast Asians are the dominant Asian group. So if you're going to do that, you need to translate into Khmer, which is the Cambodian language, and Lao, which is the Laotian language, at a minimum. So I think, you know, I've given them lists of organizations, contact people that I think can be helpful in this way. And we'll see. I'm encouraged. I'm optimistic, but it's a work in progress.
How do you think, and again, this isn't necessarily the Monday morning quarterback, the governor or anything like that, because that's really pointless right now. But just assessing, we're heading into, they're supposedly going to roll out phase two. Today we're taping on a Thursday. This will air on Friday. So phase two may very well have been described. Part of that is at least Stefan Pryor, Commerce Secretary Pryor, revealed in a talk with restaurateurs that I was sitting in on, I just happened to be watching, that it could be as early as June 1st that we go to back into indoor restaurant dining. That seems like it's moving too quickly, and the people who are going to be most impacted by that are the people working in kitchens and people who are serving and maybe are at least able to get to a primary care physician if there's an outbreak and so on and so forth. I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, my gut tells me that that seems soon as well. June 1st, we're talking about a couple of weeks. And I'm not unaware that the economy, as far as people having jobs and being able to feed their families, is not an issue. Of course, it's an issue. However, health is a greater issue. I mean, having a job, if you're dying, it doesn't matter. I mean, so we have these priorities here. And I think health ranks first. So it's a delicate balance. It's anguishing. It's a struggle. And I don't want to minimize that. People do need to feed their families. They do need to pay the rent. They do need to pay their mortgage. I understand that. But I want to keep people alive and people of color on the front lines. We are the essential workers. We are the people that are being impacted the most. So I hopefully they're talking to communities of color at length about this, because this could end up being the issue that makes us have to go back. So let's do it right the first time. As the governor would say, I only want to do it once. And I agree.
Yeah, same here. I mean, that's a major factor as well. It's one thing to just reopen, but if we have to close in 2-3 weeks, then that's a huge...
She doesn't want to do that. And I think that, you know, talking to people in terms of communities of color, in terms of how we look at this, what are the perceptions, what are the realities, I think it's important information.
Absolutely. From your vantage point right now, are you, you know, from a... I guess for lack of a better way of putting it, are you personally comfortable going out and, you know, going to restaurants, going back out into the store? Or do you want to take it slow and sort of let people who are maybe in their 20s go out and test the waters, so to speak? I mean, what does that feel like for you?
Well, I'm personally more leaning towards taking it slow. I value my health greatly. So I tend to be a little more cautious anyway, so I don't know if I'm a good barometer of what people of color, let's say, are thinking. I'm in an older category, and so I do realize that I'm more at risk, so I would be a little bit more careful. But I believe that we have to be cautious and careful, and I don't mind doing it slow. It's fine, because I'm like the governor. Let's just do it once. We don't want to go back. That'd be a catastrophe. Yeah. So I probably won't be going out to a restaurant for a while. But I don't. I'm not saying that people shouldn't go out if the evidence says that it's safe and that people are taking the proper precautions in terms of the workers as well as the patrons.
Do you feel like the NAACP has been involved in dialogue with the Department of Health and the governor's office? I know you'd mentioned that on the translation issue you were, but in general, do you get the sense that the leadership in the state has reached out to community leaders, you know, bringing them into the inner circle, so to speak, or would you rather have a little bit more communication?
I want to be brought in a little bit more, and I've indicated that to the governor's staff. I have been in constant communication with the governor's staff. I communicate with Joe Sachs on that staff. And I did have a lengthy call with Courtney Hawkins about a week ago and Kasim Yarn. And I have also communications, or I communicate regularly, you know, but I have a dialogue with Patricia Coyne-Fagg at the ACI, as well as Wamezetta Jones, who's the secretary of Health and Human Services. So I'm in communication with those folks anyway, and we've been in communication, you know, since the pandemic has affected our state. So, you know, it's not like I'm not communicating with them, but I think because of the seriousness of it, I want to be brought in even more. And I think I have a unique relationship with communities of color in terms of the non-Latino community, as well as the Latino community. I have great relationships in that community as well. But in terms of the communities of color that are, you know, especially the immigrant communities of color that have the different language issues or whatever, I think, you know, our voice, the NAACP voice, would be very valuable because we have deep contacts in all those communities. And we're willing to step up and do our part.
What are some things that the NAACP would like to see from a structural change here? Because we know that, look, when we come out of this in our quote-unquote new normal, let's hope that there are equity questions that are answered as, you know, use this pandemic. I was saying last night, for lack of a better term, to a friend of mine, use this as an excuse, for lack of a better term, to try to move things forward. You know what I mean? In areas that have been overlooked before, whether it's brick and mortar facilities in certain areas from a healthcare standpoint, schools, food deserts, all of these underlying factors. I mean, what are your priorities right now as we emerge from this?
Well, you know, our priority before the pandemic started in terms of legislation was a $15 minimum wage. I think clearly that should happen. You know, we've been phasing it up. You know, let's just do it now. $15 minimum wage. Let's do that. And as far as fair chance licensing, making sure that ex-offenders have an easier chance to get a license to work or be an entrepreneur, let's make sure that happens. And in terms of source of income discrimination, there was an issue where landlords can actually discriminate against people that have Social Security or Section 8. You know, shelter is important. Let's make sure that cannot happen. No more discrimination. But we need, as far as the health aspects, I think the governor's on the right path in terms of providing those testing sites in urban areas. And I know that's going to be expanded. So I want to make sure that that's the beginning of a conversation in terms of access to health care for the overall community in terms of permanent access to health care. Let's really take a look at, you know, the problems that when you don't have access to health care, what that does. You have food deserts, you have bank deserts, you have all these deserts in urban areas. Let's take a long look in terms of how we change and make sure that these things are a thing of the past. There's a lot of different issues, and we need to, you know, now we have, I mean, it was always evidence-based. People might think it was anecdotal before, but now we really can see the evidence. You know, it's really playing out before us each and every day in terms of who's positive, who's dying, whatever. So let's take that and have more of an urgency in terms of let's make sure that those communities are made whole. Education-wise, you know, we've got to make sure that everybody has a chance to have education. I mean, businesses, which is the backbone of economic development, right? They don't come to a state unless there's a trained, motivated, and educated workforce. So almost 50% of the public school students in Rhode Island are students of color. So if they're lagging behind, that means our state is lagging behind. We got to get that right. So whatever we got to do, and we have an excellent commissioner of education, we got to continue to support her and to make sure that we close that gap in terms of the disparity in education, because it only hurts everybody that lives in the state, not just the communities of color, but everybody.
No question.
So let's understand that we're all in the same boat. Okay. There's nobody outside the boat. We're all in the same boat. We came over in different ships, but we're in the same boat now. So we got to help each other. We need to support each other. We need to understand that by helping each other, we're helping all of us collectively. It's not somebody else's problem. It's not those people. It's us. So let's make sure that we just don't say it. Let's say it and mean it from the heart, because those things are linked. Those things that can be proven to be true. So it's not me saying it. It's a lot of people, and I think that it's time that we work together.
Couldn't agree more. And that's something that's been driving me. It's actually been somewhat depressing, is that I grew up in South County, and I've got some people who post on my Facebook wall now that whether they're saying this is a hoax or it's this or it's that, or, you know, and you show them the data of, hey, look, 30% positivity rate of just those who have tested in Olneyville, 27% in Central Falls, 02907, 02908, these zip codes that are with significant impact. And it's as if Dworkin Institute, the other day on this podcast, you know, described it as the two Rhode Islands, the rural and then the urban core. And what people lack, even if you want to be, you know, unempathetic, let's say, if that's your position, which is a horrible thing. I mean, it's really a horrendous position and should be called out, in my opinion. But if someone is unempathetic, at minimum, we are all in this together. It's Rhode Island is basically it's a one county, one city operation. So even if you live in Westerly and you think everything's all, you know, good to go, your future, your economic realities are being determined by these inequities that we're now seeing play out through COVID-19.
Well, you know, unfortunately, we live in a time of culture wars and division and people, not thinking that by working with others, it's in their interests because of messaging from the top of our country. So unfortunately, you have people that, you know, are believing certain things that are not true. And you're not going to be able to convince them that they're not true because they feel that, you know, you're out of touch or you're part of some kind of conspiracy. And so I can only say I hope it changes, but I'm not in the business of trying to convince people of the truth or evidence or anything. They can continue down that path as long as they don't try to harm me. When they try to do that, now that's a different conversation, okay? And unfortunately, we've had some evidence of even that. Not in Rhode Island, thank God, but in other states, Georgia being an example recently. So, well, I mean, you know, that we have a culture war being festered, it's being flamed, and so you're not going to be able to convince certain people, even in Rhode Island, that certain things are true or certain numbers are right, or there's always a hidden agenda behind the numbers as far as they're concerned, and there's always an excuse, and you know, that's the price we pay for, you know, living in a society where there's supremacist elements all around us.
Absolutely. I've been following, I guess, the Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity as they've made their way through this. It's a really no other way to put it, but kind of a far right group out of, you know, that espouses several ideas, one of which is to lower the minimum wage so that employers can bring people back to work. But then just yesterday, in the last few days, they've put out this statement that if you are not returning to work, you are somehow unpatriotic. I can't, that makes me sick to my stomach. You know, those types of messages, I find them to be not only, you know, really, frankly, silly. I mean, it's just kind of nonsense, but that's really dangerous because that fans that fire, so to speak, of those who would question the validity of the the issues that we have here with inequity. What's your response to the Center for Freedom and Prosperity?
I agree with you. It's dangerous. It's offensive. It's wrong thinking. Okay, you know, throughout our history, we've always had, you know, people that in a crisis say, "Let's get together. Let's come together." You know, I don't care if it's 9/11, World War II, or any other example. There's always been, you know, leaders and organizations that said, you know, no matter what our differences are, now we have to come together for the good of all of us. This is the first time in my memory or my lifetime, we actually have leaders and you have organizations that are doing the opposite. They're saying, you know, you're not patriotic, as if somebody, you know, had the right to say who's patriotic and who's not. I mean, just the arrogance of something like that. You know, now you have that. It's the first time. I haven't seen it. You know, and I remember JFK, you know, okay? So this is very new, very dangerous. It's very, disheartening. I'm sad to see this. And unfortunately, you have people that, you know, they really believe that this is the way it is. And I know who's the head of that organization, you know, a great baseball player. I know his father was a good baseball player as well. And we've talked about different things and possibilities of trying to work together on common stuff that we both agree on. And, you know, so hopefully we can continue the dialogue. I'm just disheartened when I hear this whole thing about patriotism, as if somebody could, they have the right to decide who is and who isn't. That kind of arrogance is not needed, especially during a crisis.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, it just couldn't. You know, I, if anything, you know, and again, I have no right to say this either, but I mean, to me, when you're out there, no mask, endangering people, you know, the protests they had the other day at the State House when I was up there, I mean, that is, I'm not going to go and call it un-American, but boy, does it push back against the theme of what we've built this country on in terms of the positive elements of it.
Yeah, I don't get it to un-American, American, because who am I to be saying who's American, un-American? But to me, and I've heard this by others, it's the height of selfishness.
Yeah,
being selfish when you're going to expose other people, you know, that are innocent to possibly catching the virus when you don't care. And that's what your actions are saying. You don't care. It's not what you say; it's what you do. And clearly, what you experienced at the State House was uncaring, selfishness, wrongheadedness, as far as I'm concerned. And it's just too bad that, people, they don't think about the fact that you might be harming other people, because this is a virus. This is not something else. This is not, your typical political, arguments and that you can handle in a different kind of way. This is something that links us all in terms of public safety, really. So, I just don't understand how people can be so selfish in a crisis. That amazes me. But hey, look, I saw it, so I got to believe it. I got to accept it.
Exactly. Right. All right. Last question here. Summer's coming up. Are you feeling optimistic? Are you feeling good? I mean, in spite of everything's been canceled, quote unquote, we know that there's not going to be a 4th of July parade, no jazz festival. All the little street fairs are likely to not happen. But, how's morale just for you personally?
Morale for me personally is fine, because I think that the leadership in the state is on the right path. I think we're doing the right thing. I think that even though all of these things are going to be not happening this summer, and surely I like almost everything you said. Yeah. I like to get out to the festival. I like to do all of that. However, not at the expense of having to redo this again. We're going to do this once. So if it enhances the chances of us having a more normalized fall and winter, then it's well worth it. I can go without baseball for a summer if I know that we can have a healthy fall or late fall, winter. If I know that's going to happen, then I'm all for that. I want to make sure we do it once, like the governor always says, do it once. I want to make sure that at the end of the day that, we can go out and feel safe, feel healthy. So whatever time it takes for the evidence to show that this is now okay, I'm willing to go with the science. I'm willing to go with the doctors. I'm willing to go with the state leadership, and I'm willing to do whatever, and I'm not going to complain. There's plenty of other things to do with your life other than go to a festival, even though I love it. It just gives you a chance to self-reflect on your life and the things that maybe you haven't been able to get to because you've been so busy doing other things because you're working 24/7. So that's what I'm trying to do, and I'm getting more exercise. I'm running 4 miles every day, or at least I was up until a week ago. So that's been helpful mentally, physically, hadn't had a chance to do that in a while. So, it's all good. I'm happy.
That's great. 4 miles a day. I've been running as well, but nowhere near that. So I give you a lot of credit. That's amazing.
It just makes me feel better mentally and physically, I've lost a little bit of weight, which is good. So, just don't overdo it, 'cause I got a little shin problem, but I think I'm going to be out there next week. It's what I do. So everybody has their own thing. Ride your bike, do whatever you got to do, walk even. But get out the house, get some air, don't get too close to people, wear your mask, and we're going to all get out of this together, and we're going to do this, I think, as Rhode Islanders. And I'm optimistic and I'm encouraged.
Jim Vincent, Rhode Island NAACP, always a pleasure. Can't wait to do it again.
Yes, can't wait. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for all you do.
My pleasure. Thanks for all you do. I really mean it. Thank you.
Have a good day.
You too.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hey, folks, a great way that you can support the Bartholomew Town Podcast is to leave a rating and go ahead and hit that subscription button wherever you're listening right now.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.